I can see like you'd be like.
Oh, your name is right here. If you want it.
I'm doing.
But it's funny. We just got it. Oh, I just figured you would.
That's
Christian.
Okay.
Chase said Christian said.
Yeah.
Good job.
How are you going?
The packet?
Yeah.
Hey. Thank you.
You should be able to. Adobe's asking me for my ticket. No,
we the same public
Adobe is asking for my birthday. She knew.
It was very fun to have Ella send me the information.
I was like, hi, could you please send this because it's in the domain system.
And then I couldn't find it because I was reading it off my phone. So I texted said, where exactly is it? She sent it immediately back. Whatever, number 19.
It's not as
extensive. Are you good?
Yeah, the monitors blink on and off.
Does that mean we're good?
Yes, we're good.
So I'll give an example.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the November 5th, 2025 Zoning Ordinance Committee meeting. We have two people signed up to speak. I'm going to call up. I think you can speak where you are. Oh, wait, you want to do it? You want us to do introductions?
Yeah, if you could just have everyone state their name.
Colleen, can we go around and just do introductions?
Just
names. Just names.
Holly Hillis.
Rich Brittingham.
Mara Walsh Copeland.
Matt Lawrence.
Phil Junda.
Harriet Wegmeyer.
Keith Zerschmid.
Gwen Kennedy.
Maggie Hour.
Bill Hatch.
Beth Erickson.
Joe Pacciulli.
Jen Bingle.
Stephen Pickrell.
Josh Elkins.
Stephanie Capps.
Dave Schneenberg.
Ryan Reed.
And I'm Michael Capretti.
Ryan Nilsson.
I'm sorry. So, Harriet, you're signed up. I'll start with you.
I am.
3 minutes. I have to start a timer. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Unless Stephanie can do a timer.
Hold on. I feel like I'm in the middle of the fishbowl here.
Yeah.
I'm just going
to
go over here.
Stand wherever you want to stand.
Gotcha.
As soon as you're ready.
Okay, I'll stand right here. All right, you can start the timer. Good morning, Harriet Wegmeyer. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. I own and operate Wegmeyer Farms along with my husband, Tyler. Our farm was formed in 2002 and has been an agricultural destination for families since that point. I had the opportunity to serve as a stakeholder at the January 29th TLAC Transportation Land Use Committee meeting. When I read the proposed draft language for ag processing and agritourism, I was surprised for this meeting, as there are several points that were not discussed during that TLAC meeting. Overall, I find the language very limiting for agricultural producers in Loudoun County. If we want to create an environment for rural businesses to thrive and succeed, the size limitations placed on production building size and visitor limits must be removed. So Wegmeyer Farms is a well-known pick-your-own farm that raises strawberries and pumpkins. Our farm offers the opportunity for families to come to the farm and pick produce right from the field. For many, this is how they learn how food is grown. The overly strict car and visitor limits shared in the draft language would threaten the viability of our business. I'll speak just about the strawberry crop. We have 4 field locations. 3 of them are open for families and the public to come and pick their own strawberries. A crop needs to be picked when it's ripe. Due to the nature of fragile crops, our visitors to the farm increase during our peak times during the season. On average, our fields are open for strawberry picking 7 weeks, 7 days during those weeks. However, depending on weather, it can range from 3 weeks to 9 weeks. For example, when the strawberries are flush, we offer 64 reservations per hour. Reservations are offered per family, which is usually one car, but sometimes two. Because our reservations are per hour over the course of the day, we would be at the upper limit or exceed the car limit at the suggested car limit that you have in place in your language. With fruit, if not picked from the field, it will spoil and affect the quality of the new fruit coming on. We use a digital gatekeeper in our reservation system to manage the crop and crowd. This has been a very effective means of management for all. Farms in Loudoun have multiple crops to harvest each year and follow a similar cycle with each of these crops. So this is just the strawberries. I was just speaking about the cars. Then there is the occupancy allowed, and I was very confused about that because that would have each person driving like five cars to the field or to the farm. So your occupancy allowed for us on our main farm, home farm, we have it's 25 acre farm. That means we could have 20 people at a time in our farm, but we could have 150 cars. So again, I think that language really has to be looked at and reviewed, but you can see both, they're not viable when you have a crop that is being picked. We don't want it to spoil in the field. Another point I was but I can submit.
You want to submit that to the
state? Yes, I can submit these via.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Kate?
Come on, talk fast. I know. Hold on,
I don't know why I shake when I. You guys aren't scary, but I shake at these things, so forgive my shaky voice. Hello, my name is Kate Zerschmid, and I am here today as the owner of Great Country Farms and also as a stakeholder who provided input during the TLUC ag processing discussion that led to the proposed language being discussed here today. This proposed language is draconian and does not take into account much of the discussion from the TLUC input session. At that TLUC meeting, all stakeholders agreed that ag processing should be permitted with 51% of the product coming from within a 50-mile radius of the farm, and that's not noted in this language at all. I'm very disappointed to find all of the effort that went into that meeting and that that key decision is not here. Additionally, there are caps that Harriet mentioned proposed on the number of cars and guests that were never discussed at that TLUC meeting. These caps are 400 cars and 100 guests, which are nonsensical since 100 guests cannot drive 400 cars. This limit would crush farmers' ability to thrive and grow their businesses through on-farm experiences. We just completed 30 wonderful days of pumpkin picking in October. I'm wearing my school tour hosting uniform just to share that with you. We hosted thousands of Loudoun County school children for pumpkin education and picking tours. To see the joy on the faces of these future farmers and consumers is simply awe-inspiring, and it is why we are honored to farm in Loudoun County. We started with school tours, and we're doing them 31 years later. We've seen generations of children, and it is why we do what we do. Many Loudoun schools have more students in one grade than the total permitted guests in this proposed cap of 100 guests. This cap would crush our school program and the opportunity for Loudoun's children to learn how their food is grown and be inspired to be a future farmer. I urge you to strike these draconian caps on cars and guest counts completely and include the 51% guideline to allow farmers to be free to create experiences that keep Loudoun's children learning and dreaming and our food available to be picked on our local farms. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public who wants to speak? All right. Any disclosures? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to know I met with
I did a 4-hour tour this past weekend with several of different farmer groups and stuff in regards to looking at wineries, breweries, tree houses, and small businesses in Western Loudoun.
Anybody else? Okay, approval of action report from October 1st. Does anybody have any comments? Do you have a question?
We were just trying to figure out if we stay or go. Sorry.
I would run. I can't help you with that. Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm opposed.
I'm abstaining, seeing how I wasn't here.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have 1, 2, 3 abstaining. Did you get that stuff?
Who made the motion?
Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
Colleen and Rich and Dale.
Joe,
abstained.
Did you second?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Who's it? Colleen?
Colleen, Rich, and Dale abstained.
Dale. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, it's your show.
All right, let's get into the updates on CPAMs and ZOAMs. The first one is the floodplain ordinance update, and I'm joined by our colleagues from Building and Development, Gwen Kennedy and Maggie Auer. You guys have an update?
Yeah, so one of the updates is we're bringing back language today related to an item we discussed a couple months ago about accessory uses to residential, adding a category that would allow a small footprint to basically be allowed via a zoning permit. So the language is up on the board. It was included in your package. So we wanted to see what your thoughts were about this. And then if you agree to it, then amend it in some way, we would add that to the draft language that we previously had already looked over. And then I'll just give an update about where we are with the active recreation item once we talk about this first.
All right. Does anybody have any comments on Mar?
What page?
Hold on, Mar.
My question was, what are the setbacks related to this? Because accessory uses could, with things, even some of the like large, even a large playground, I mean, it's going to matter. So I didn't see where the setbacks were related to the accessory use for residential.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but wouldn't the setbacks be whatever is just allowed in the underlying zoning district?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. It just didn't say it on this one page.
Right.
Thanks. Okay.
Yeah. So in general, the underlying zoning district is present for a floodplain. And then there's the uses that are included in floodplain in addition to that.
So it's the underlying zoning district, not necessarily the use specific standards setbacks or both. That was why I was not sure.
I'm not sure related to the underlying. Yes, if there might be use specific standards, they would apply.
Yeah, sure. I had a conversation with Soil and Water Conservation. There was an issue with a neighbor of ours, 600-acre farm, wanted to put in stream exclusion fencing, and the Soil and Water said we can't do it the way the language is written right now, the way that the zoning administrator has worded it. A fence post, a fence will not work. And they were trying to resolve it, and I don't know whether that's been resolved or not.
That has been resolved.
It has been
yes,
resolved.
Yes, the language currently includes exclusion fencing as a permitted use.
Okay.
Can you speak up a little bit?
It's been resolved. Not this language, but other language has been added to the draft zoning ordinance for exclusion fencing to allow it. However, it does still have to meet engineering criteria.
Is that brand new? Because I had heard that it was going to be considered a special exception a week ago. This is actually a big question I've had. Was that just determined and added?
We have not changed the language except for this since we last
got your approval.
So are you talking
issue.
About risker or are you talking about floodplain?
Okay, it might be risker versus floodplain. That might be the distinction there.
Yeah, that is where there's a bit of a conflict. I believe it's not permitted in risker, but it is permitted in floodplain.
Right.
And those are two separate. This is not, floodplain does not have any relation to
We're not updating RISCR with floodplain currently.
Right. Yeah, and part of the issue was is that there's going to be a fencing other than exclusion fencing. Exclusion fencing is to fence off creeks from cattle. And if you wanted to put up a fence without going through soil and water, I think that is still illegal.
That is still not permitted, correct?
It limits farming. But, okay. Noted.
Okay. Yeah.
Two things. Number one, catching on is I don't understand why we're regulating that unless you go through an agency, you're considered illegal when if you have the due diligence or the knowledge of how to put up the fence and all, why are you required to go through this additional permission when it's the exact same fencing and there's nothing other than that if you want additional credit, shall we say, for what you've done, that requires you to do it?
Yeah.
That's one question. I mean, I can hire someone that can go out and have done for, we've all done it for years and years in the old days. You get your post hole digger, you dig your fence, you put it up, you know how to do it to make sure it's strong enough that the cattle don't get through it or the horses or whatever. You do it so that the water can penetrate through it. I mean, we all know, with all due respect, anybody that's done it knows how to do it. You don't need to ask a second party regulatory to give you permission to do it. But if you don't, now you're considered illegal and you're building the exact same fence that you would have been doing without their permission. So I think that's something that definitely needs to be looked at, that why is it okay if we say, mother, may I, and this person decides we can, versus using what we know is structurally sound. And so then my second question, my second question is, and this is after this weekend spending some time, is how do we define footprint? I mean, I'm not being facetious, but I saw a lot of, whether people like them or not, I saw a lot of tree houses this weekend that basically don't really have what most of us would consider to be a standard footprint because they're not on the ground. I saw playgrounds and not even playgrounds, but much trails and stuff that really aren't a footprint because they have it so that water can penetrate through them. There's no permanency to them. So when we say it's 25 feet, square feet, a footprint, how are we defining what a footprint is?
Here it's 5x5.
But what is the footprint? Is the footprint concrete? Is the footprint that it's got to have a footer? What is the footprint?
Well, can I just add on to, because maybe it'll make some sense. Like I'm thinking about, you're talking a treehouse, but I'm just thinking a play structure that
not
has.
Not even just even that, but like to me, the structures of the Costco, the old Costco treehouse. I mean, there's a whole
is
bunch
it
of stuff.
Is it touching the ground or is it like?
It's the ground area. If you're looking down from space, it's the ground area.
So if
like
it's,
the base layer.
So recognizing that play areas are kind of awkward, right? They've got, you know, two by fours over here, up here. What we thought the best way to do would be, to Jason's point, you have 25 square feet when you're looking down, and that's where it is. If the play area can fit within that, then it is consistent with what we're proposing here.
And I'd also add that this is a topic that's going to come up in the adjustments ZOAM that's coming up, is defining footprint, because that is a term used already in the zoning ordinance without a definition, and to distinguish it from lot coverage.
So then this would be considered almost premature to do this because we really need to know what we're defining that we're saying is the 25 feet.
I guess like a follow-up question for clarification, like say a playground has a slide, is it just the post that touched the ground or is it the full slide?
If the slide fits within a square of 25 by 25, it would be within the playground.
Yes, I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen a playhouse that's only 5 feet by 5
yes.
feet.
I don't even think a slide will fit in 5 feet.
Right. I mean, 5 feet.
If it is, it's not fun. It's just yeah.
So that's a conversation. Whether the area is larger or smaller than 25 square feet.
I, with all due respect, I don't think it is because what we're being asked is we're being asked to agree that 25 feet is the number we're looking at. And to me, that's kind of an arbitrary number until we know how that 25 feet is being measured and what it encompasses. I don't. So I just think that this is, with all due respect, a little premature until we have the other understanding of what we're really looking at when we're, and the same thing, to go back to my first question, I still think there's a real discussion to be had about what's legal and illegal, and maybe that's the wrong word, and I'm sitting by the wrong person, when it comes to fencing, because I think as long as it's done where you can provide that it's been done correctly, I don't know that you should have to have, because there's nothing that requires, I mean, I'm going back to the 40s and 50s, there was nothing that required us to ask somebody to evaluate and sign off on the county that this fence met somebody else's requirements, and other than that you wanted credit for it, right, either financially or from setbacks or from erosion control of the different things. So,
right. But in this case, this is, remember, this is floodplain.
I understand.
Well, so it's a structure that's located in the floodplain.
But if and I also, ask, I would also add respectfully. Hannah,
so this might be a helpful clarification. The exclusion fencing use is just exclusion fencing. Mm-hmm. It's not exclusion fencing that's been approved by Soil and Water. So a farmer, apropos of Soil and Water, could get our approval in floodplain, go through the appropriate floodplain approvals independently of Soil and Water, and get an exclusion fence installed. They don't need Soil and Water.
But that's opposite of what you just said. You said that it would be considered illegal unless they went through that. That's what you said
in the language again. Question. That's why.
So what I was saying was not the agricultural fencing. If someone wanted to put up a privacy fence for their home, that is not permitted. An exclusion fence is not how we interpret it. What we have here is it's exclusion fencing accessory to agriculture. That if that is what they are doing, then it is a permitted use, provided they go through the zoning permit and the analysis that they're required to go through.
If they don't go through Soil and Water, or
they don't have to go through Soil and Water.
It's just exclusion fencing, period.
Okay, but the purpose, I mean, for a lot of farmers, exclusion fencing comes with benefits to them. I mean, they get support for doing that. So I can't really imagine a farmer saying, I'm going to do exclusion fencing and not go through Soil and Water.
That's what I was going to point out. Like, if they know, but that's Soil and Water and they qualify, I would assume it's because they don't know the program exists, because the amount of money that comes into Loudoun County for that program, like, it's extremely helpful.
Well, our approval of the exclusion fencing is not dependent on whether they go through Soil and Water Conservation District. Okay. It is a use that is permitted, an accessory to an agricultural use.
Okay.
And so you've answered my question. I appreciate that, because I thought in the first,
the first way I understood confused.
It, it sounded like if you said mother may I, you could. If you didn't say mother may I, then it was illegal. So you've answered, and I appreciate the clarification.
And is the word exclusion, why is it in there? I mean, what about a paddock? What about fencing a field in half? And that's not exclusion.
So that language is being added because we had a conversation with Soil and Water, and they said that that was what would be appropriate to add into the language.
Right, but it's making
no additional
illegal.
Any additional discussions about other accessory uses, because I don't think a paddock is technically considered fencing. I think that would be considered something else. I don't know, but.
Well, it's going to limit farming to not be able to put a fence to divide a 50-acre field in half.
Sure. So I have a question for the chair. This is new. Like, my understanding is that the language that we're talking about right now with fencing and exclusion fencing is a great point, but we've kind of concluded this. Do we need to do something? Like, the language has kind of been, like, the only thing we were asked to look at was accessory uses to residential. Do we need to do something to open this back up? Or?
Well, I guess as chair, what I would say to you is, if the answer from staff is, thank you for your comments, but this is it, then there needs to be a motion. So Zach can make a recommendation. Did I not hear you correctly?
I mean, I guess that is what I'm saying.
Like, that's what I thought.
Yeah, my understanding was that the language had kind of been put to bed already, except for this.
Okay.
For exclusion fencing.
You're saying everything that we're talking about, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. At our September meeting, I thought the right. committee.
That's how I interpreted what was said.
I'm not trying to speak for Maggie, but I think she's saying we put the bed exclusion fence. If it needs to be brought back up, we need to bring it back up. And also, now we're talking about other types of fencing. That's different than what's on the board.
Okay, so Maggie, I'm hearing you say, this is it. Thank you for your couple comments that you made, but this is it, guys. Is that what you're saying?
We hear what you were saying about the fencing,
so,
but this is it. So if there is something else that needs to happen, a motion needs to happen.
Okay. All right.
So it would be a motion added to reopen the discussion on exclusion fencing and other types of
fencing.
The
motion can be whatever you want the motion to be if you get a second and you get a majority of the vote, right? I mean, you can make a motion to start over. It doesn't matter to me. I'm trying to manage the meeting.
I may be too dense, okay, but talking about exclusion fencing, this is talking about playhouses.
And residential.
And to me, it's two different things.
Right. I think we've gotten a bit, there's two different topics going on in the room right now.
Right. Yes. And we're keep saying it.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is. And so.
Size playground.
Okay, so let me ask a question. Is exclusion fencing something you're going to go back and revisit, or are you done with that?
We are considering ourselves done with that.
Okay. So. Playhouses and anything else, other comments that were made, do you want to consider that, or are you done with that?
For the playhouses, for this, we're open. Like, this is still open. And okay.
It's playhouses, right?
Okay, so then Joe's comment about exclusionary fencing is done, unless there's a motion, but other comments that you hear could get some consideration from staff, depending on what those are related to.
If they are related to this language, then okay. Yes.
Okay. So go ahead, Joe.
I have comments on this.
Go ahead.
And we can decide if we have another motion. Okay. So my comments with reference to this is the 25 square feet. I understand what you're doing. Makes total sense. But 25 square foot of a shed is a 5x5 shed. Pretty simple to understand. 25 square feet of a yard or a lawn is nothing. Extension of lawns, extension of grading or fill is going to probably far exceed 25 square feet. So it just seems like the limitation of it's this broad topic, and then we're saying 25 square feet. I understand if it's 25 square foot of a structure, whatever, we'd have a definition of a structure, playhouse, a doghouse, I understand those things, but having lawns, it says fences, grading, or fill, such as lawns, gardens, those are, they're going to far exceed 25 square feet.
So,
you know, if I go down there mowing into the floodplain, sure. And it becomes my yard, my lawn, So
to clarify, these are uses that do not require the construction of fences, grading, or fill. So you cannot grade or fill for these uses.
It says that do not require approval of a building permit.
Erection or construction of fences, grading, or fill.
So it's all of those things. Yeah. It's approval of a building permit, erection or construction of fence, grading, or fill. Okay. It's all of those things. It can't have any of that.
Alrighty.
And this was to respond to some of the issues that were raised previously. Correct. About, well, we can't do these things in the floodplain. We need some consideration. So this is what you've offered as consideration.
Yes.
Dale.
So when you do your swing set and you create a level spot for your swing set so that you can put the 5x5 slide in there. Okay. You can't go any bigger than that because then you've exceeded this because you've now leveled it to put the swing set in, correct?
You would not be able to level it.
You've got to level it. So you're not going to put a swing like this. Okay. You're going to try to level this off so that the area where the play set's going has something level to it. And just, I mean, go down to Broadwood Farms, go down to Potomac Farms, go back down in there, look at all of them. They've got a leveled out area where they've got some mulch, and that's a swing set, and it's in the floodplain.
Right, but our concession is that right now we do not allow any of these things in the
floodplain. I understand that, and we're not fixing it, with all due respect, with what you're doing, because it's unattainable to do a 5x5 and still not have to tear down the swing set. So we're not fixing the problem. We're just saying you can have your swing, you can have your slide, but you can't have both of them. I think what would make more sense would be to table, and I'll make a motion to table this till at least the next meeting, to allow people to look at what is the correct dimension that we could look at where you could even do a swing set. I'm not talking about a commercial swing set, but at least so that we realize that we're taking care of what the issue is, what got brought to us.
What do you consider a commercial play set?
I didn't say commercial.
Just
I said we're not looking at doing commercial. We're looking at allowing for doing a swing set in this area. And we don't know that we've taken care of it. We're not looking at creating commercial playgrounds. So I would make a motion to table.
Okay, well, I'm not going to take motions yet, but just hold on.
You just said we were.
So there are some older neighborhoods where the homes and the lots are all in or partially in the floodplain. But for the majority, when you look around Eastern Loudoun County, the majority of the lot lines are out, are on the edge of the floodplain, at least what I've looked at. They are not in the floodplain. So people would be extending beyond their property line, which they do, to put play sets and things like that, which I think is part of the issue here, that you can't put your equipment and stuff beyond into the floodplain. There are some residents that have an issue because their properties are in the floodplain. And to me, that is an isolated and separate issue than this broad issue of being allowed to put stuff in the floodplain. I mean, maybe I'm whatever.
Jason.
Just to add on to what Jem said, I think part of the discussion, too, I mean, if we continue to pursue this is, you know, how I look at it is the property completely in the floodplain, or are there aspects of the property, locations on the property that are outside of the floodplain, and you just prefer someplace that's in the floodplain? So if that's the case, I mean, just locate everything outside of the floodplain. Too bad. You know, it's the floodplain. You can't put it in there right now. And I think it's a very isolated issue.
So I'm thinking of a neighborhood in Percival that I know the backside of a lot of the houses is right above a ravine and in the floodplain. And their swing sets are back there and nobody complains. I mean, it's a complaint-based system. But in that case, you're dealing with HOA regs that would not allow them to do things like put them in their front yard or their side yard. So does something like this override what an HOA would have to say about where you can put a play set?
I think the HOA regs are separate from zoning regulations.
Yeah, okay, so in that case, that wouldn't be a fix for that neighborhood because all of their backyards are backing right up to the ravine. So that would be an issue for something like that.
Just and we're assuming on. that is in the
my HOA response guidance. There, though.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't remember.
Say again.
I would assume that would
assuming so, that
I don't remember part of the HOA guidelines.
Yeah. Right.
Go ahead, Jason.
My response there, though, is then get the HOA residents together and have them change their covenants.
Who's going to put their place in the front yard, Jason? Come on.
Hmm?
Who's going to put their plum set in the front yard? Come on. We're
HOA's
not going
to approve that.
Doesn't well, make I mean, any sense.
Okay, does anybody else have any comments they want to make before we get to motions?
No? Sorry to be dense. I do not understand. I'm sorry. Accessory uses to residential uses that do not require approval of a building permit. Okay, cool. Comma, erection or construction offenses. Comma, I mean, that's a list of things. I do not, is it saying that do not require approval of a building permit for the erection of or construction offenses?
It's saying
it's a list of things.
It's saying that the accessory use, the thing that you're proposing, it does not require a building permit.
Yep.
It does not require erection or construction of a fence. It does not require grading. It does not require fill. That is the intent.
Which is in place.
Such as lawns. I can have a lawn. So if I have a lawn that doesn't require grading or fill, I can go in the floodplain. I have a garden that does not require grading or fill, I can go in the floodplain.
Or fence, correct.
And if I have a playhouse that doesn't require those things and is less than 25 square feet,
correct,
I can go in the floodplain.
Does that mean you're the
that accessory use
into the floodplain can be no more than 25 feet as well? The way that I'm reading it, it is like you can go with a lawn 25 feet in.
Yeah, I don't know about this lawn square language feet. Because now that I'm thinking, I mean, this language is we're using is in other jurisdictions and multiple other jurisdictions. It kind of took from those to add there. But our intent is
We're specifically focused on structures that are accessory to a residential use. That is the main intent of this, because for a garden, for example, we're talking about raised beds. Right. And
it
those
seems
types of
to
things.
Me just based on what you're saying, is that that introductory language, such accessory uses, it should say such accessory structures. Because the uses then includes gardens and lawns. But if you're concerned about a structure, the structure can't be bigger than 25 feet. The structure can't store gasoline, chemicals, fuels. The store, the structures must be tethered to the ground. Like, to me, just that one word and that intro, at a minimum, that in such accessory structures.
We can tweak the
line. Or any accessory structures are subject to the following standards. That to me just makes it really, really clear. As opposed to saying.
That's where I was going, is that I just feel like there's either an adjective or it's punctuation is something that's going along that's making this very hard to read and subject to wide interpretation.
I think lawns is confusing in it too, because
a lawn is an English major in the house.
Well, I think it's just an extension into it, but it's still, it's crazy to say that somebody's.
I have
right.
A,
exactly. That doesn't really
I understand the structures, but then that raises a question on raised garden beds. Is that a structure? And if you have,
I think that the
if you
staff
have
would say 10
of them, can each one be 24 square feet or do you aggregate
it's,
them?
It's aggregate.
It's aggregate for all. So if you have a raised garden bed, that's a structure. You've got to have less than 25 square feet.
That is staff's proposal in this item. Yes.
Thank you for clarifying.
So I would propose that the 25 square feet is too small. I don't know what a Costco children's playhouse is, probably 7 by 7. So that's a little closer to 50 square feet.
Okay, so
I think maybe.
I know we're reducing the incidental structure square footage that is permitted from 800 to 700 in the new text, something like
600.
That. 600, and that's in line with state code. That was like
federal
code. So presumably that federal code that allows for 600 foot structure is set because there's some type of general understanding that that size structure may not have an impact on the floodplain and therefore it's allowed. So why wouldn't we be sort of consistent if we're, seems like the main point of this kind of discussion is about the size, but if federal code allows for 600 feet of incidental structures for permitted uses in the floodplain, why wouldn't we just match that here? And then we're kind of carrying forward the same thought process and consistency for structures.
So what we are trying to do here is prevent a homeowner from having to do engineering analysis to put in a playground. So we are trying to find a small enough footprint that we are comfortable with, just carte blanche saying you can do this without getting analysis. The square footage for that we're putting in for incidental structures would require engineering analysis. And so that is what we are trying to do here, is by regulating these, by putting this in the zoning ordinance, we are now requiring these sorts of things to be looked at from a, you know, floodplain standpoint. And we have to assess whether or not they're gonna have an impact on the floodplain or offsite properties. So to avoid having something as small as a playhouse or a play area, get an engineer to sign off on a no-rise certification, we're trying to make that footprint relatively small. So that is why we're not proposing 640 square feet.
Okay. That's fair.
So maybe if you guys...
Dale first.
Okay. So in other words, you've just kind of come up with the number that you're comfortable with of 25 square feet. It's not based on science or any engineering stuff. It's just a number that you're comfortable with. It's so small. But where we've heard on the other side over here, where there's like a federal standard that says we should be okay at 600 square feet. So, I mean, it sounds like all we're trying to do. And then we've heard over here that maybe 50 square feet sounds better because that's a typical playhouse from Costco. So it looks like we're doing exactly what I was my first concern is we're just basically throwing numbers up to see what can get 8 votes to stick to the wall instead of going back and realistically looking at what makes logistic sense of what these structure size are and all, so that we can say this is what we see. So
Are you ready for a motion?
No, Jason.
No. I think the last point kind of mixes two separate things to the incidental structures versus this. This is to permit some things without engineering analysis. Incidental structures require engineering analysis regardless of size. If you're 1 square foot, if you're whatever the max size is. So this is solely to permit it without an engineering analysis, which is something I would say staff isn't completely comfortable with. However, they said 5 square feet. So it's not an arbitrary thing. I mean, 5 square feet is something where staff says, yeah, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of change to warrant engineering analysis. I mean,
it's 25 square feet.
25 square feet, sorry.
Here you've got smaller.
five by five. But I mean, what I'm saying though is,
try to say 5 by 5.
I wouldn't say that it's arbitrary. I mean, 100 square feet, that's 10, a 10 by 10 thing. That starts to me saying, I don't know that from a staff's perspective, I can just kind of turn a blind eye to that, especially when federal regulation is saying we need engineering analysis for all this stuff that's going on.
Yeah, obviously. Okay.
So when this originally came up, I wondered if there is the possibility for these kinds of minor things to be able to get some sort of a county waiver if you apply for a waiver. Is that at all even possible?
Like a PD court?
Waiver from what?
I don't know.
Federal regs?
No.
Waiver from like the 25 is your question.
Or just a waiver to acknowledge that it's a playground, not a grading project.
Some sort of administrative waiver. Yes, that's all I'm asking. Is there any possibility?
I would say we can entertain it. I know that in the past that DEQ, and when we looked at this previously in FEMA, did not like waiver language within the floodplain.
It's too much variation.
I guess the question is, are you saying that this language would continue to exist and anything outside of this would get a waiver? Or are you saying we would get rid of this language and instead we would have language that these types of things could have? I guess I'm not sure what the waiver, where that's playing into.
Good question. Okay. And I hadn't thought it all the way through, but I guess since most of the discussion is about the size, then to me that would be this stays and then you get a waiver if somebody wants to do more.
Joe?
I'd like to make a motion to see if staff will consider a change that with reference to number one says must not exceed for structures for above grade structures must not exceed a total aggregate footprint of 50 square feet. And I think that's the end of my motion.
Is that all you have? Is there a second?
I wanted to do a motion and you wouldn't let me do that.
No.
So what just happened?
Well, he's got to get a second before we do anything.
You wouldn't even let me make one.
No.
I guess that does.
All right. Dale, you want to go ahead?
I'll second it.
Okay. Dale, would you like to do a substitute motion?
So, again, I think we're just throwing up numbers with no understanding of what the numbers mean. I think what would make more sense is if people the ability to look at the Costco playgrounds, the other things that we're talking about, and then to come back with realistic numbers that then we can propose to staff that everybody can be comfortable with. So I'm not sure it's appropriate for substitute because it's very contradictory to what he's asking, because I'm going to ask that we actually table this until the next meeting to allow people to come back with their own suggestions, looking at what is viable to deal with the motion.
I'll second that. Okay, thank you. So is there any discussion on that motion?
Well, first of all, is it in order? Can it be a substitute to the main?
What's that?
Is it in order? Can it be a substitute to the main?
I'm allowing it.
Okay.
I think I have that power. Go ahead, Matt.
could we also at the same time ask staff to look at the language that Joe and Colleen mentioned, yes, with structures on top of it?
Yeah,
could that also be part of that motion?
That's fine. Yes. If you accept it,
as a friendly,
and Bill, you have to go. Okay. So that's the motion.
Can somebody say it again? Where we are.
We're basically tabling this motion to the next meeting to allow people to come back with different ideas and solutions as what fits, and then to look at the suggestions of what concerns that both Colleen and Joe brought up.
Regarding the whether it's a structure or use is the best terminology.
And the size.
And
yes.
What?
And the size.
So size with the structure.
The size of the 25 square feet we're looking at right now. Is that appropriate? Is it not? What should that be?
With example. How deep examples? Matrix.
Okay. I'll call for a vote on that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's your motion. Now, does staff have enough direction on what to look at to bring back to us? To report back with what was in that motion?
I believe so.
My understanding is also that when we come back at the next meeting, members of the committee will also have square footed input as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I'm wrestling with is, do you want those a week before the meeting? Or are we going to have another talk about it and then have five different opinions?
My preference would be that we get it before the meeting so that we can look at your ideas and as staff say what we are comfortable with based on what we're seeing.
Okay, how long do you want it before the meet?
I mean, is that something people can do in like the next 2 weeks?
Before Thanksgiving?
Sure. Before Thanksgiving.
Exactly. Will you accept that as a friendly? This Zach should have their comments in within 2 weeks. Or by?
Like 10 days.
The 19th?
19. Does that work? Is that friendly? Will you accept that?
I will.
Dale, okay. Are you good?
Sure.
Okay. All right. You wanted to stay, didn't you? She wanted to stay and hear this. All right. Thank you, staff.
Thank you all. All right, so for the data centers, we have staff working on some. Yes.
I wanted to bring back up, because you said somebody would have to make a motion. I wanted to bring back up the consideration that we do reopen up for looking at an exclusionary fencing as it relates to farming. And I'll make that in the form of a motion.
Well, that wasn't what we just talked about, right?
You said that we needed to deal with one, and then if somebody wanted to deal with the other, they could bring that up, because staff said they felt like they were done, but if somebody wanted to bring it back up, they could at that time.
Okay, got it. So this is on the same topic that we just did.
No, because that is residential uses.
And this is the farming uses, and you farming said uses. We were only dealing with the
okay.
farming.
Okay. The okay. No, if it relates to floodplain?
Yes. Yeah, sir.
Then I'm okay with, go ahead and make another motion.
Okay. So,
Bill, do you want to make that motion?
So I'll let Bill make the motion.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Let you make
it. I'd like to make a motion that we study the legitimate farming uses in the floodplain, particularly fencing.
The fencing.
It would divide fields.
Okay.
Not exclusionary. Exclusionary fencing, I know what that is, but this is just putting a fence up that might divide a field.
Second.
Okay.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Is there any discussion?
Let me just ask a quick question. Does that, Joe, cover everything that you had on fencing?
I believe so.
Okay.
This is a motion to direct the staff to study it, correct?
Correct.
Right.
So bring it back at the next meeting.
Right.
I think the conversation would be with Soil and Water Conservation Districts to find out specifically. So I do have a field that touches the floodplain, and I would love to divide the field into two for rotational grazing. That's where I see this is what you're talking about doing. And I don't really know how that falls within what they support, because it doesn't technically exclude the fence, the stream. It goes this way from the stream. So I don't know, but is that where you're thinking?
I don't want to get permission from Soil and Water to put a fence up.
Right, this isn't about going to them.
It would not, that's not with Soil and Water, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything that goes in the floodplain, you need permission for.
Mm-hmm. But from you guys is all yes. I'm talking about, not from anybody else.
Yeah, from building and development.
Right.
Okay. So we would come to you and say, I'm going to put a fence in this field, and you would say no or yes.
Well, I think that let us go back and look at how the language is written. Mm-hmm. We understand what you're talking about, so we will look at it, and we can bring it back.
If we get a motion.
If you adopt passes. Your motion, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Is there anything else on floodplain? That's enough direction, right? One. That was enough direction, right?
Right. So let me just be clear. You're asking us whether to look at fencing associated with agricultural uses being permitted in the floodplain, right?
Correct.
That is what we're looking
at. That's
what I heard. Okay.
We're just looking to clarify whether or not it is
all fencing
proposed to be allowed or not. You're not asking us to add language in or do anything. You're just looking for clarification on whether or not
it's allowed. I mean, it may lead to that depending on your answer. I don't think you can make that.
But like right now, we are just looking at interpretation.
I believe that was the motion. So, good deal.
I would like to have it open enough that if we need to suggest a change, that they give us the flexibility that we can do that through part of this process.
Right. I think we can do another motion on that when you get to
information. Okay, I just want to say it's not exclusionary to that. They're just going to come back and say, no, you can't. Yes, you can. I would like them, if it's no, you can't, but this is what the next step would be to make it yes, you can, while we're having the discussion.
So a path to.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. Are we good? Are we done with floodplain?
Well done, Mr. Chair.
Well, that was the hard one today.
I'll go now.
All right. Let me update a couple of the other ones that we don't have a whole lot to discuss. So then we can get to the, 30 seconds for the data center standards and locations. OAM, we have staff is going through some internal language review right now that we intend internally to get done by the end of this week. We are drafting all the standards with the goal of being completed by December 23rd. That way, that puts us to the Planning Commission work session at January 8th of this coming year. So that's what we're shooting for right now with the data center standards and locations, ZOAM. That's phase two. So January 8th, 26th, the Planning Commission work session.
So then does that still come to us then in February?
It does still come to you guys, still planned to be February.
Right. Yep. Any questions on that? Next.
All right, the next one is the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments number one. That number one is in there. Just make sure we all understand it's iterative and there will be number two, maybe number three, we don't know. Right now, we're internally working on the draft text there as well. The one update I have for you still has me as the project manager, and we've reassigned this project to Josh Elkins, who's in the back, and who will be managing the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments number one, ZOAM. All right.
Ryan, yes, tell me where we are on in the packet.
Where you are in the
still
packet.
Still on the agenda?
5C.
Yep.
5C. Thank you.
Two quick things on this. Later on in the packet, it said the October meeting said that the draft text was going to the board in June 2026. This says January 2026.
I think you said planning commission for this one, right?
Oh, the zoning ordinance rewrite. Oh, I see. We do have January.
Adjustments.
Sorry.
The adjustments.
One. Yes, the rewrite adjustments. Yes, it's, I'm sorry, January 26 is not. Not correct there.
So it's June. That's correct later in the packet.
That's correct. Okay. Yep. We're still shooting for June for final adoption for that.
Okay. And my next question relates to something that is an overlap between this ZOAM and Walrus. It actually came up in a BZA hearing the week before last that there seems to be a discrepancy in personal instruction services. In the use table on line 40, it's for ag and rural, it says 76, sorry, it says personal instruction services is blank, which means it's not permitted. So in that location, it's not permitted. But when you go to line 40, small business, ag and rural, it says AR1, AR2, permitted/minor specs. So the same use appears in two different places with different permissions, which was actually raised by the BZA as one of the considerations why they ruled against the county. So does that make it to an adjustments group two? Does it get escalated to group one? Or does it get lumped into Walrus? Where are we going to fix it?
So I know we're aware of the issue. I'm not sure where we've landed on whether it goes to Zora, or excuse me, the zoning ordinance rewrite adjustments because it affects countywide, or if it is just for Walrus and only Western Loudoun rural uses. So we haven't put it in a bucket yet, but we are aware of that.
Okay, so you are aware. That was the only reason, is to make sure that it has a finds a home.
Correct.
Okay.
All right, before you get to D, I just want to go to the meeting dates for next year before we run out of time on this next one. Has anybody looked at the meeting dates, and does anybody have any issues with them? We adjusted April for spring break to the second Wednesday instead of the first. And we adjusted July 8th to the second Wednesday because of July 4th. And I didn't know, does anybody have any comments on this before Stephanie sends out all the invites?
And the suggestion is 9 to 11, right? Timing wise.
9 to 11, that is correct.
Thanks.
In this room. All right, Steph, I think you're good. All right. Open up the can of whoopass.
All right, so for the next one, the Western Loudoun Rural Uses and Standards, or Walrus as we affectionately call it. I've got Brian Wilson's project manager. We also have Dave Schneckenberg over here to continue our discussion of that draft text that we had from the last meeting. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to Dave.
Oh, yes, sorry. Which one? Hold, please. Oh, the memo?
The
presentation.
Yeah, presentation.
This one. It's coming.
Get them later. Or they're available.
So I'm just going to jump right into things, but this is going to be a continuation of the October 1st meeting, since we did not get to everything. We did not get to discussing the new agritourism section and the revisions made to the definitions that were corresponding to the revisions that we made. To briefly go over the timeline moving forward, after today, we'll be coming back to 5 more ZOC meetings. And as you guys just discussed, the April 1st meeting is the second Wednesday, so that's different. But we'll be going to 5 more ZOC meetings from December to April. We have a special TLEC stakeholder meeting tonight, and then one more at the beginning of next year. So we'll be going to three regularly scheduled TLUC meetings for direction from TLUC on draft revisions to be made. The plan is to go to the December, January, and March TLUC meetings and then come back to ZOC with revised text based on the direction that we received from those meetings. So that will be the January, February, and April meetings. And then to briefly summarize the revisions made to the sections that we did not get to, let me go to the next. For agritourism, we were directed to remove the use from the cultural tourism use and create its own use-specific standards. In doing so, we added language to clarify that this use is only permitted in direct association with on-site agricultural operations. We carried over standards from existing cultural tourism use for the number of vehicles allowed on a property at one time, being dependent on the lot area of the property. We added language that the owner, operator, or lessee must maintain or operate the use to clarify that operators may be renting the land upon which the use is being conducted. We added hours of operation consistent with the hours of operation directed by TLUC. Created new standards for the maximum occupancy allowed in all structures used for agritourism, and added criteria to promote safety in structures used for agritourism to allow for increased occupancy. So I do want to note that these vehicle, these standards were actually taken from the existing standards for cultural tourism, because as the zoning ordinance is now, agritourism is under cultural tourism. So those standards are existing. So if you have an agritourism use now, you're subject to those standards currently in the zoning ordinance. And that was just carried over to this standalone agritourism use specific standards. I'm going to go. Sorry, I kind of went through all that. And then,
Whoa, you just went through a whole bunch of good stuff.
We're going to talk about these as you go through.
Oh, well, I was going to go just introduce.
No, we're going to talk about them as you go through.
Okay.
So I'll open up the floor for 40816 comments. If there are.
There are.
Dale?
So I apologize for not being a last minute of family emergency, but I just want to say that it's very difficult to follow this because I really don't know what decisions were kind of made at the last meeting or direction that was given. And I did read all 100 plus pages. But one of the questions I have is, so, and this goes back to the, I guess I'm going to say the Flintstone days when I was back on the farm and stuff. So agritourism, how do we separate agritourism from just agriculture? And I'm not trying to sound flippant, but I'll give you an example. Like, we were very active in the 4-H program. We raised dairy cattle. I showed dairy cattle from the time I was 10 until the time I went to college. Part of our program of what we did was we brought in schools and stuff at different times to learn, to let them see us milking cows and that type of stuff. We never considered that agotourism. We just considered it part of educating the school system. But it was part of our production of what we did. We didn't even most of the time charge for it. But now I see that the way I read this, all of a sudden if we want to teach people about how to raise pumpkins or other things that are associated with the products, now all of a sudden we're going to limit the amount of people that can come, where before there was never a limit on the family sharing their knowledge with the next generation. So I guess what I'm trying to look at is what makes it agrotourism versus simply agricultural use? I mean, is it that I only do it as a business to bring people in, or is it that I am supplementing to educate people around what I'm doing?
So I think to answer that, I'm going to look at the existing definition of agritourism, because it says like it's a commercial enterprise that links agricultural production and or processing with tourism in order to attract visitors to a farm, ranch, or other agricultural business for the purposes of entertaining and or educating the visitors and generating income for the farm, ranch, or business owner. So that's existing in the zoning ordinance. And like I said, so agritourism is subject to the cultural tourism use specific standards as it exists now. During TLUC, we were directed to take that agritourism use out of cultural tourism. And that's where the amount of vehicles on site at one time came from, is from those cultural tourism. And actually, in the revised 1993 zoning ordinance, cultural tourism was farm-based tourism. So it all started from farm-based tourism. And now it got converted to cultural tourism, which included agritourism. So there's always been standards for this type of operation. It's just a matter of now creating a new standard called agritourism and creating use specific standards for that use as directed by TLUC.
So if I have a event at the farm and I don't charge somebody to come, is that not agritourism then? Because I'm not profiting from it, I'm just educating.
It is still agritourism,
but I'm asking them because it says your definition said for profit. It's no longer for profit.
That may be something we need to clarify, because with land use impacts, money doesn't really matter whether you're making money or not. It's the land use impacts that we're.
I'm asking the question because I feel like we're trying to regulate something that has been going on and we used to be proud of since the 40s and 50s in this county. And now all of a sudden it feels like we want to shrink it as much as we can shrink it instead of continue to see it grow. But yet we don't want to build any more houses in Loudoun County, and we don't want any more breweries in Loudoun County, and we don't want any more wineries in Loudoun County. So it seems like all we want is open space parkland for other people to enjoy the view shed of, without realizing there's a cost to it. I mean, if farming was so profitable, my family would still be doing it. The reality of, especially if you're in the eastern end of the county, it's not profitable. So instead of regulating it to death, I'm just trying to figure out ways we can be more creative to either look at the definition or look at if it's different pockets of way we could look at for, if it's for education purposes, those type of things, where it has a different standard that it's held to, like when the school buses come. I mean, if four school buses come, what's the difference in four school buses or 100 cars? Because they're carrying the same amount of people. But the four school buses can come, but the 110 cars can't come. It's the same amount of people.
The amount of carbon dioxide it emits. Four buses versus 100 cars is a big difference.
But they're not coming at the same time. So there, it wouldn't be any, it could not be any difference. You can't arbitrarily just make that number that it is that.
I would say I absolutely do not think we're regulating anything to death by any stretch. I think we've got agritourism going around all over the place, and I think we celebrate it and support it. I do think it's perfectly fine to have adjacent homeowners have some kind of standard they can depend upon for how many cars are going to be coming down the road and how close it is to them, regardless of whether it's school kids or people coming in their own cars. I don't have any problems with that. The only thing I was going to say with the car section was 5 acres is very, very small for 150 cars a day. That is really small, especially if they're next to other 5 acre properties. I mean, it really depends on how private it is, how close it is to other properties. I would consider separating out the 5 to 10 acre category or anything less than 10, because 5 acres is very small.
Rich.
So you mentioned that these standards exist in the ordinance previously, and I think even go back to the RISE 93. Is that true?
Yeah.
And were the numbers exactly the same then? So noting that, we have two members of the public that operate well-known establishments that kind of fit all these definitions, that operate them, that understand how the ebbs and flows of that business. So shouldn't staff or can staff take a look at current modern day data provided by these users to update those standards that presumably have been in the ordinance for 20 years? And just because they were in there previously, I don't know how those numbers came to be, what kind of data was evaluated, but it just seems like, and Tia makes a good point too, like we're talking about size and what's appropriate, but we're also talking about just the realities of agriculture. And they brought up a few good points about harvest season and, you know, fruit only has a certain window that it can be picked and all these things. And, you know, not to go too far off the rails, Dale brought up a few things that I wasn't here last month either, so I don't know how much they were discussed and litigated, but, you know, the whole prime ag soil thing, we go from that and now we're saying, oh, well, but no one can come park to visit these farms. And it feels so contradictory that I think at a minimum staff needs to, in whatever form is appropriate, get with the people that actually own and operate these farms to understand capacity of people, number of cars that are appropriate, and get a better understanding of just how this all works, because it does work now. And so I just be very cautious of having arbitrary numbers in there that are just in there only because they've been in for 30 years. I don't know what the right numbers are, but I think there are people certainly in the county that do, and I'm not sure that it's staff. That's
Mar.
I definitely love the strawberries, and I took my kids to Great Country Farms many, many times. And you have huge operations, but that's the point of this agritourism use-specific standard. It's to have the different levels for any other types of operations, agricultural operations, that could have small, medium, or large. So yes, relooking at some of the numbers would be fine. I do wonder how you could get physically 150 cars on 5 acres and still have anything to show. But the point is really to make sure that it is not only about the larger, wonderful operations, but what if you have a smaller venue that wants to do it? You do need to have these parameters on there for the adjacent uses that are going to be living next door. When you then look at the maximum occupancy levels, I don't know what is meant by 408.16.8.1, where it says limited to 2 increases. because you look at small, it says 20 plus 20 equals 40. But if you add a second increase, it could be 20 more and it's 60. But there's no human being that could look at this and really figure out, is it 40, 100, 200, or is it 60, 150, 300? And that would be, again, the 10 or 20 times a year. So it needs to be really clear, because it's not only going to be for on top of a farm. It could be on top of any other type of rural business that wants to have an agritourism event.
So I'm getting you. Yep. So anything that's existing today should be exempt from all these guidelines?
No.
That's what I thought I heard you say.
Where did I say that?
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, there's a couple of things. What's on the screen right now is talking about safety. So I want to come back and speak to that. I know that the discussion regarding occupancy and traffic will be coming up in a moment, but I do want to provide a little bit of clarity, if I may. According to Ms. Wegmeyer, the Oatlands, on which she is a lessee, they have 500 cars per day to do the strawberries. That is a small area. And one of the ways that they handle that is through the use of digital gatekeepers, like being able to have pass time so that you can come in and move through. So I would agree with Rich a little bit, which is to say, since the original language was written, there are new tools in place that can help to mitigate and handle traffic flow. But I will also say that I can either answer the discussion or at least add to some of the discussion regarding occupancy, but I prefer to wait until everybody can see that on the screen, if that's all right. Regarding what's in front of you here, there, I do have comments. So, Mr. Chair, may I speak to what's on the screen?
Go ahead.
Okay. So regarding what's on the screen, we have, there's 2 points of conversation that I think we need to add in. One of which is a July 17, 2023 fire marshal letter that was sent out to all the agritourism professionals in Loudoun County that spoke to only needing 3 things. One of which is portable fire extinguishers, a simple written plan in case of an emergency, but plans shall not be constructed to be interpreted as a fire evacuation plan. And then the third is a signpost in a conspicuous place upon entry that says that this building is exempt from the uniform statewide building code, be alert that is, exists, and it goes on and on and on. And the other thing I do want to point to when we talk about looking at some of these uses, like installing water tanks on farms, ponds with dry hydrants, that's also not included in the 2018 Virginia Agritourism Review and Building Codes done at the state. But what was included in that state language was really taking a look at what the economic impact to our businesses would be by requiring things like installing a water tank or putting in a dry hydrant. The language that came from the state talked about, again, what would be the economic impacts on agritourism and rural businesses, question mark. Requirements for these building code compliance for farm buildings hosting agritourism activities may be prohibitive for the majority of Virginia farms and result in the end of agritourism functions and or closures of small farms. So I think that this information coming up, I think we kind of need to, similar to what we just discussed regarding the floodplain, anchor it to understand what this looks like before we take any action on it. I would say that this could be limiting to our businesses and I think needs to be explored further.
Okay.
And then to I'll be hold clear, because I also find this chart to be, the it's in particular the middle category, which has a typo in it because it is 16.C.1, not E.1.
D. But, D.1.
All right. Sorry. I'm still reading wrong.
So you're right. It's wrong.
But it is wrong. And it was very confusing. I do find this to be a little too ambiguous. Wow. I can't talk today. But we're not saying that if they don't meet those safety standards, they can't do agritourism. We're saying they can't be twice the size of daily visitors, right? Like that is how I'm reasoning.
Size based.
Right.
Well, occupancy based.
And it is twice the number if they meet those.
Yeah, if you meet one of the criteria, you can increase your daily occupancy in all the structures for use for agritourism by 20. And if you meet 2, then you can increase it by another 20.
Can you say that loud?
Okay, that's not how I read this at all.
Say that aloud.
Yeah, please say that.
So if
you put it up.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Really.
Could you put up 408? It's in the documents.
Oh, yeah.
This table needs work.
Jason, you want to say something while we're doing this?
Just to explain this, this isn't.
we're going to the chart. Did you want to go back to the last screen?
Okay. And then let's just scroll down to that last chart.
So if it's if you meet one, you can.
All right. Well, I stand corrected because this language has changed slightly, I think, since the last time I saw it. The cards, again, that comes from existing standards. I thought that the maximum occupancy allowed, when I looked at this, this wasn't supposed to be a limit on the daily number of people that can come in to the use. This was supposed to be the maximum occupancy of all structures used for agritourism. So in other words, if you have 500 people coming in, whatever, a day to pick strawberries, I don't think 500 people are fitting inside a structure that you have on the property. It means that, you know, the structures you use together for your agritourism on that small size have to be able or are limited to 20 people for the small scale agricultural operation, agritourism thing. And then if you do the compliance with the building code, et cetera, the extra water protection availability, then you can increase that to 40 and 60. Same thing if you're the large scale, your structures that you are using for your agritourism use are limited to 100 people at any time occupying it. So it's not 100 people, only 100 people per day can enter the structures and come out. It's your occupancy is capped at 100 for those structures. That's what I thought the original intent of this was.
And then
you start complying with the other standards, those are supposed to, if you comply with certain aspects of the building code, additional aspects of the building code or fire prevention code, that maximum occupancy goes up to 200 to 300. That's what that was intended to be.
And that's the buildings, not total people on site. That's people in the buildings.
Correct.
Okay. At any one time.
Yeah, not the entire day.
Yes, it would be the same thing as a commercial occupancy for like a restaurant or any other use.
So you can have 100 people in a building at time and another 500 people roaming around and picking strawberries outside.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so one of the challenges I have with this is this chart, and this could speak back to what Jason just mentioned. This chart, with the exception of that middle column and then the discussion of small scale, and large scale, is exactly the exact same chart being used for bed and breakfast. So bed and breakfast homestays are allowed 20 people inside and 10 times per year that parties may exceed that. Bed and breakfast in 50 people, 20 times that may be exceeded. The country in 100 people, 20 times that can be exceeded. This is, I would venture the statement that this is a cut and paste that is not appropriate. So when you take a look at, and I spoke with some of the stakeholders who spoke. So for example, Stephen Bradford, Potomac Vegetable Farm and Mutu Farms, they talked about, and also Pamela, during the TLUC meeting, they talked about having classes. Their classes exceed 50 to 100 people on a weekly basis in their production facility to be able to talk about how to make salsa. So again, I think that we need to be really careful at how we're looking at this. And I would say that from my standpoint, I think it needs more work. And I think we really need to understand what the impact of this would be on the businesses. If we've got flower making classes, if we've got people that are looking to do things, that's a different, it's a different structure than what is happening in our B&Bs. So why we are linking the two together makes absolutely no sense to me, but I understand the intent. And for that, I am concerned. So the other thing I would say, answering and asking Jason again, when we're talking about putting additional things in, like, dry hydrants and all of those other expenses, Why is that coming in when we have the letter from the fire marshal telling these businesses what they need to do to be compliant?
It's coming in because, again, so staff, you know, we're being pulled and we're getting comments from a lot of different directions. You know, there's comments from the county side, you know, about safety. And, you know, at some point you cross a threshold where, 300 people in a building that doesn't meet building code, you know, where the property only has one means of ingress egress, that's a dirt road that can't even support a fire truck. That's potentially a big problem. We're also taking comments, and we've met with members of industry and spoken to them and tried to get ideas from them. You know, what is it that you need? What are you trying to protect? And we are trying to accommodate them. You know, this language is a work in process. Now, Beth, what I would say is, under this, that fire marshal letter applies to the maximum occupancy for those structures. And this is what we're saying is, if you want to go above that maximum occupancy, again, it's not on a daily basis, it's the maximum occupancy of your structures. Basically, these are additional criteria we want you to meet to take it to that next level. I did not envision it originally as being, you know, full building code compliance. I think the original thought was, hey, Wally, hey, Micah, choose, you know, your top two or three things, you know, that you would like or that concern you the most when we start getting to these higher occupancy levels, that you would want those to be something that they comply with. The water protection thing, that was something we thought maybe for the worse would be something a lot that may be relatively easy for some of these farms to comply with. You know, if you have an existing farm pond, put in, you know, we heard that there was a program through economic development, or that economic development can help people usher people to through the state, where the state helps pay to retrofit farm ponds. You know, since then, I've also got conflicting standards from, or conflicting feedback from Soil and Water that says, well, you know, farm ponds have kind of fallen out of favor recently, and so we don't actually recommend them anymore. But so that was something, if you have an existing farm pond, you know, maybe there's some state money available where you just put in a dry hydrant and right there, you know, you get that 100 person occupancy boost. So that was just something we floated out there. Again, you know, I think there's still some work, if this is something that we choose to pursue as a way to increase the occupancy for the structures. I think there's some work talking further to the building official and fire marshal saying, you know, we don't want, where the intent here wasn't to require full building code, fire prevention code, but, you know, what are, you know, those few major items, big ticket items that cause you the most concern that, you know, would be something that at these higher occupancy levels you would want to see done.
And Jason, I appreciate that. And so one of the things that I think is important, what you just said, is the statement of we thought, right? I would say that when we had this discussion at TLOC, none of this came up. So I think that there is opportunity for further work with the industry to understand the impacts. When you're looking at things that there may be plans with economic development, there may be assistance programs, I think we need to know that before we as a body say, yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, that's fair. Part of the issue here is, you know, staff, we're 2-3 months ahead of where TLUC is and its meetings, you know, and, you know, we are actively soliciting feedback from people, and we can certainly get more feedback. I mean, I think that's part of the purpose of having Zoc, is to give us more feedback and more ideas.
Mar?
I would like to support what you are doing, and you're absolutely on track with hundreds, thousands of comments during the zoning ordinance rewrite. It's not only about the TLUC stakeholder meetings and that input. We have to remember that there was 4 years of input, and this came up over and over and over again. And the gentleman down here told me the actual number that of the comments that were actually in ZOR. And it really is not only about the perspective of the businesses, it's about the adjacent uses, so that if you are living next to an agritourism operation. You just want to know what to expect and what's going to be there, including if you're going to be the largest size, that if you were originally an ag barn, that you changed it to be something else that's going to have more than 50 people for assembly, then for the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, you're on the right track. So we need to be able to do this because we have grown in such a way that it is important for the adjacent use to know what's going to be next to me going on the weekend. And it's wonderful to have the events going on. But if there are too many of them and they're all different sizes next to my property, I want to know, is it going to be a wedding? Is it going to be the strawberry picking season? I just want to be able to plan my time as well. And that's what was said over and over and over and over in the zoning ordinance rewrite comments. And there are 4 1,000-page documents on the website that anybody can go back and look at. So it's not only about the TLAC meetings. It is incumbent to also differentiate that, yes, this largest type structure compliance, it might need a different twist if it's an original historic barn versus one of the new construction ag barns that was never used for ag. So I want to thank you for the work that you're doing.
Yeah.
I have a couple of thoughts. During the TLAC discussion, something that came up that I actually don't remember mentioning during ZOR is what is the cap on when you are allowed to exceed it, that there is no cap? What does exceed mean? You know, we had a really good example that was cited during the last TLUC meeting where a farm was doing a special fair and advertised to vendors they were expecting 20,000 people. So, you know, that's certainly an exceeding of what their daily allowance would be. So I think we do need a top end cap on that to kind of prevent that kind of thing from affecting neighbors for sure. There's so many examples of the seasonality of it and where that's a, you know, I live just down the street from Snickers Gap Tree Farm. And we know that getting down Williams Gap during the few weeks of year is an absolute nightmare. You're not going to be able to do it. That road is just clogged. But that's seasonal. That's not something I have to live across from that's going to have that kind of traffic on a weekly, you know, basis. So I do think the certain number of exceptions is perfectly fine. And we as a community absolutely understand that. And support them. In fact, I get my tree there. But, you know, it's very different from having that be the every weekend reality for all of those neighbors.
So a procedural question.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you looked at me.
It's Judy. One thing I would offer, this was one of those topics that we felt like we had direction from TLUC, but if we're this far apart, you know, TLUC did express that they had an issue with safety and they wanted us to address safety. So this is a text we drafted to attempt to do that. If we're this far apart, rather than come back to ZOC 3 or 4 times, I would recommend that we go to TLUC on one of our other scheduled meetings where we're seeking formal direction, mm-hmm. that we might take this back and have some formal direction from TLUC and have the fire marshal and the building official there.
Okay, so thank you. You just set my stage for
me. Okay, good.
So I don't think ZOC, I'm on the record that I want everything to come to ZOC with a TLUC recommendation. And I've listened to some of the meetings, and it's obviously red, white, green, blue. And TLUC's not saying, we're green, write it up. And I appreciate Jason, and I'll echo what Mara said, I appreciate staff getting ahead of this. But I don't think ZOC should be put ahead of TLUC making a recommendation, okay? And I don't know why we would start debating any issue until TLUC gives us a recommendation to react to so that we can then decide what ZOC's position is. And staff, I don't know how we get there, but I was told the first one's already out of the gate and that wasn't getting a TLUC, but then I listened to the last one and I didn't hear TLUC other than chair talking about a weekday should be 9 o'clock instead of 11, because even though ball fields are 11, something should be 9. I didn't hear any direction out of anybody on TLUC.
There was no direction
Basically, the July forward, none of the issues discussed, and I think it's the first three meetings we had general consensus that we felt like we could bring forward to Zach. But anything that occurred from July forward is actually going to go back to TLUC at a separate meeting, and TLUC as just a group is going to vote on direction. So you are going to have direction from those meetings going forward.
Okay, so help me.
Okay.
Why would anything be on our agenda until we have TLUC?
The first three stakeholder meetings are not going to TLUC for further direction. We felt like after that discussion, that was just going to be it. We weren't bringing that information since we had already done it. And since that time, we had discussed it with TLUC that, you know, they wanted to do this new format for the direction. So those first three meetings, what was discussed with the stakeholder meetings is what we're bringing forward to you right now.
Okay, so my understanding was, I guess I'm wrong, that what we did last time were the items weren't going back to TLUC.
The equestrian was the very first meeting that was done in, you know, November 2024. You know, there wasn't a formal TLUC vote and direction on that language, but as a whole, the group seemed to have consensus on much of the language that we discussed. So that's what we brought forward to Zach.
And your definition of consensus is staff drafting language and TLUC saying it's okay.
Basically, it was an input session where we got feedback from everybody, and we felt like the opinion was that everybody was on the same page, and that, you know, this was the language that we were going to bring forward. But it was not a formal TLUC direction given. There was no vote.
So my question is going to get back to process.
So
in the last meeting, when we went through the equestrian uses, we clipped through pretty quickly and said, stakeholders agree, stakeholders do not agree. We went through it pretty quickly. And I believe that the recommendations in that meeting was that staff was going to hear the discussion that we had, make any modifications to the draft language. Am I correct on that
part? And bring it back to us.
And bring it back to you. Am I correct on that part?
That's what I thought.
That's what I thought too.
Okay. So
Did staff hear that too?
I'm not sure. Were we circling back with the language? That's not my understanding.
Because it wasn't captured in the minutes, so I'm asking.
We don't have the time to bring everything back repeatedly and repeatedly. Okay. We may be able to bring back, you know, several sections at one time and give you one last look, but there's just no time in the board's adopted time frame for us to bring this back over and over like it's being done with the floodplain.
So how does Zach evaluate if they're not in agreement with the TLUC and staff language if you're not going to bring it back?
Based on and going off of what Judy just said, if there's enough of a disagreement with the language that's presented and that you feel like it did not capture the discussion at the stake, we do have that third TLUC direction meeting. So, you know, even though we weren't anticipating bringing, say, ag processing to TLUC for an additional, you know, direction, we could do that if Zach felt like that was needed.
If I may continue my thought.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so on that equestrian stakeholder meeting when we went through, and there was general consensus from the conversation of members of Zoc, there were some areas where we said to be considered a next draft, what have you. Where does that information reside in the conversations that we had? Because they weren't captured in the minutes. So where do we go from our discussion here to it going out back to staff? Where is the checks and balances on that? Because the packet that came in today, that we're looking at today, did not capture that discussion on equestrian. And then I'll get to today's process in a second. But I wanted to understand that process.
We have a consultant in the room with us who is there documenting everything that Zach says. And we are capturing that in a spreadsheet. We'll do that throughout the process so we don't lose comments and votes.
Thank you, Judy. But does that come back into the minutes so that we can see that that was adequately captured?
I would like that too.
We could do that if you would like.
I think that would be helpful.
You can attach it to the minutes.
Yeah, sure. So that we kind of know that the conversation was captured. So that answers that first question. Thank you.
So hold on. So can I just understand timing of that? How quick does he? So we're having a meeting today with Collins. I don't think. Were you here at the last meeting?
Yes.
In October. So do you have the matrix for or the spreadsheet for October already done?
Not for the ZOC meeting, but we have all the Walrus meetings done. We'll have the ZOC meeting from last time and this one done this week.
Okay, so well, Judy, you know I'm very sensitive to time. I get it. But if we're not going to get our comments back for 2 months, that's a little bit problematic for ZOC.
That's just because that was the first ZOC meeting. There was a little bit of a delay and we had our task order to sort out. So normally it'll be very quick.
Once we get the results of this
few days.
Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead, Pat.
Thank you. So regarding this discussion point, I know that there's still things that we've not gotten to. What is going to be our process? Because I think we could have a lot of discussion over particular items, possible consensus, possibly not consensus. And as we're going through this item, we're kind of skipping between understanding, you know, how one is impacting the other. What will be our process when we go through at the end of this? Do we do a vote that we say we agree with it or we don't agree with it? What are our rules of engagement?
I mean, I'm hoping, unless there's a mutiny, that we get to a point where everything that's agreed upon, we probably don't need to debate very much. And everything that has conflict comes in for a discussion and, I don't know how we're going to try to do it, but a period of time for discussion and then good, yes, no, proposed changes or three or four types of motions that we'll make and vote on.
Terrific. And I'm sorry, Chief.
If that's one okay. Second. That's what I'm thinking.
And so as you're doing that, one of the things I would ask for, and I think we'll have that conversation, say that to me feels very comfortable. We go through the language that's in there. But I think what would be most helpful is if it follows actually the language that we are discussing. So as an example, we completely skipped over the 51% discussion that Ms. Zershmi brought up, and we went directly to this item as opposed to what we did in the equestrian, where we went from the top, this one, this one, this one, this one. So some form of consistency, I think, would be really important in this process.
I agree. This is just a continuation of why we went to agritourism first, just because we didn't discuss it last time. So after we got through agritourism and the definitions, we could go back to the ag processing because we discussed it last meeting. But since we didn't get to this, that's why we just went there first, I guess.
But it's a part of the language that was put in for agritourism and ag processing.
Yes,
but hold on, but I think let's talk about process. I think there's a difference between you giving us something and we make comments and we see in the matrix back versus something you're giving us for the first time. This stuff we're to see for the first time.
This was in the last.
Yeah. We just didn't get to it.
We didn't get to it for it's not a comment.
Right.
Okay. But Sav's first presentation is out.
Yeah, for the agritourism and then right. Chapter 12
right.
Definitions.
Right. So it's no different than what we did in October.
Correct.
Okay.
It's just a little confusing because we don't have what we discussed before.
Right.
And so when I got the packet, I'm like, oh, okay, now where am I?
Yeah.
So it is helpful really to have sort of a reiteration of this is where we ended up and now where we're going.
So let's try to get through the what you did not present last time. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is agritourism and one other thing, right?
Yeah, the chapter 12 definitions.
Chapter 12 definitions. Let's just try to get through them because we have 20 minutes left.
Can I just we have comments on process too.
Hold on.
Regarding the question on process, I would just like to reconfirm that the original Walrus project plan said that it was going to be taking off of, it's a leaping from, the original zoning ordinance rewrite. And that the only input is not just the stakeholder meetings in TILAC. Is that correct? Yes. So when you're using the information, you're not only relying on the TLUC stakeholder meetings. There was supposed to be a third, a third, a third representation, just in line with the Kimley Horn report from 2023. Is that correct?
Yes. So once TLUC gives us direction, that direction would have taken into consideration.
So in the TLUC meeting, not all the input from the 4 years, the thousands of comments, are being equitably represented, because the people in the seats, it's 54% business tourism, 30% ag conservation, and 16% residential. So it's already skewed by the time it got to those meetings.
Yeah.
So if this input is also supposed to represent 4 years of county work, then that needs to be recognized. And I do want to make sure that we understand, for the middle column there, it says limited to two increases. So when do you get the second bump? What causes the second bump there? So it's 20 plus 20, or is it 20 plus 20 plus 20?
It's 20 plus 20 plus 20.
And the last 20 comes only if you meet the criteria of D1?
Yes, if you meet a second one.
Dale?
So, and this may not be a very popular statement or comment I'm about to make, and everybody knows how much that's going to bother me before I make it. But first of all, this shouldn't just represent the last 4 years or whatever people are talking about. This should represent everything that's been going on. This started back in 1972, then moved to 1993, then moved to 2000. When we all got involved, everybody used to want farming. We had A3 that allowed you to spin off. Then in the early 90s, all of a sudden, people didn't want the spinoffs anymore. So then we had to figure out a way that we could make it so there was equitable interest still left for the farmer, for him to be a handoff to his families that wanted to be there. County didn't do the processing exactly correct, and then came the lawsuits. And everybody decided the way to settle the lawsuits was to come up with this use of the possibility of cluster subdivisions. And one of the ways to give back interest or value to properties was to allow for this economic opportunity through rural economy lots and stuff to be used there. Ever since that's happened, everybody seems like they want to stop that from occurring. But was one of the things that was agreed on, not 4 years ago, not 5 years ago, 20 to 30 years ago, sure, in order to try to keep this going. So to say that we're only looking back, with all due respect, is disingenuous. It's not looking at just the last 4 years or those 1,000 states.
Totally agree. It was rural uses 2015.
I didn't interrupt you. Can you help me finish?
Rural uses 2015. I'm agreeing with you.
Okay. I didn't interrupt you, so please don't interrupt me. So that's number one. Number two, to say that this thing is supposed to be split up 30, 30, 30, and to make a decision that because somebody that still lives on a farm is now an agribusiness and not part of land conservation is also very disingenuous. Because what they could have done when the numbers were higher is they could have sold that property out to be A3 subdivisions, A1, you know, cluster lots, which I'm sure problem right now with the way it has changed, probably wish they did. They are just as much as conservation of land this in this county right now as anybody else that's in any conservation group. So I think we need to stop categorizing people into names and categories simply because they choose to do productive things with their farm that have to keep the family in their business. So I apologize for my little bit of outburst here, but I sit here and I keep hearing the same thing said, like, because there's people that want to make money on their land and have to do that. I mean, I can tell you in 1972, we had people coming from Fairfax County to our farm to watch us milk cows, and they were schools from Herndon and every place else. It was no worse then than it is now to try to keep that going. So I am just kind of over this separation of ownership. It is the entire county, and it's how we preserve it and what is the best way to do it to keep it equally valuable for the next generations. So
my dilemma is a little bit different, which is Zoc's not the place for that fight.
Exactly.
Period. End of discussion. That's why it's a TLUC,
right,
to make a recommendation with staff to come to us to review, guys.
So when they weren't making a recommendation in the first couple of meetings, we were just a group of stakeholders adding our specific expertise and inputs. It's why I don't really think, especially if we're in strong disagreement, we should be voting. What value is that vote? That vote then probably erases the inputs and labeling where that input came from, because where that input came from matters. And I view as, especially for those first four meetings, as stakeholders with a vested interest giving our input on the situation from a zoning perspective. I don't think a vote necessarily helps anything on, especially those meetings without the direction. The other thing I would say is the numbers Mara's citing, it is not preservation and conservation that was underrepresented in the TLUC meetings. It's residents. It's residents who just live there that do not make money. It's just residents that are impacted by the surrounding businesses. They are vastly underrepresented in those meetings.
You bet. And I appreciate that, but I don't think that's a ZOC.
No, it's not a ZOC issue. It's just that's what she's talking about. She's not talking about preservation and conservation being underrepresented. We've got 34%, I think, is the breakdown right now. But it's the residents, so.
Look, I think the reality is we're being recorded, right? I need to watch what I say. I think the reality is there's a few people on ZOC that are very concerned about different things in Walrus. And there's others that probably could care less.
Right. I agree.
And I think
sorry.
In my perfect world, I would love to have a system in place where five or six of us get together and decide what's okay. So that's easy. And what's not okay, because it's going to be the same arguments that are being made at TLUC. We hear them over again and have a moment to discuss and vote and get it out. Because we're not a regulatory body. We're an advisory body. And the bottom line is it comes out of us and then it goes through a whole nother process. And then it comes back to us. So to me, we're still at the beginning of the process. And again, I don't want to turn ZOC into a repeat of TLUC because TLUC doesn't have the political will to make a recommendation.
So if I may, I will say that there are other topics that come before this august body that I would say that I don't really have a dog in that fight, right? But it's important that we as an entire body have, because we've got to be able to endorse whatever action happens out of this committee. So just as I will sit and listen to discussions about whatever it might be and would offer, after those arguments, would offer my opinion as a commissioner, I would assume that everybody should be able to provide that same level of input. And that can be done, and that's what we do on everything else through votes.
Are you talking about through ZOC?
Through ZOC.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Did I say something was contrary to that?
No, I was just saying because okay. That was a discussion saying that
vote, and the only thing recorded is the vote. The the input from various different stakeholders is often not that included.
Right, because we're not an individual group. We're a ZOC group, so if it's
and we have stakeholders.
If it's 8-7, it's 8-7.
And we have stakeholders that were purposefully excluded from that TLUC process. This is our chance to give our input.
I hear you. Dale?
I just want to clarify. I thought at the beginning of this, we were going to be taking positions or help make positions once items were finished through the TLUC committee. Okay. And now we're hearing, they haven't made a final. And I've either sat in the pews or I've watched every single meeting they've had. And I would say there's more things that they haven't reached a consensus on than they have reached a consensus on. And even some things I think that they reached a consensus on, it looks like they're coming back to rediscuss. So it just seems like to me, once they make a recommendation, then that's what should be coming to us to say, here's where we're at. Can you support it? Can you not? What is your thing? Instead of this, like being told that we're a little bit ahead of this, we're a little bit ahead of that. I mean, let's get out of that. Let's say when you're done, send it to us.
I hate to admit that I'm agreeing with Dale.
Can you turn make sure the recording is 45 reflected?
Well, I would recommend that what we do is just bring back the equine text next time, and not bring anything else back until we have crystal clear direction from TLUC.
Amen. So moved.
I mean, just bring back the equine next time.
Context. Right. I think we're good with that.
Yeah, and I think we can incorporate our wiggles
and our process on
that. And we can give TLUC another month, and then maybe because we've thrown out ad hoc committee. Did I say that right?
Correct. Yes.
We've thrown that out for a discussion, but we kind of tabled it internally. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to work a little bit on what's the process, mm-hmm. but we're good with bringing equine back next time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that.
Thank you, Judy.
Hi. Is there anything else anybody wants to talk about? I'll give you 10 minutes back in your day.
Definitions.
What?
Definitions.
Oh.
You want to see tapes.
We have a hard stop at 11.
There's somebody's coming in right after us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't we do definitions and equine next time? Is that okay?
But do the definitions pertain to something that will be impacted by further TLUC direction on these topics?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just do equine next time.
Let's do equine. Yeah.
We'll hold off on definitions for now. I mean, Larry, I don't know.
I'm not disagreeing.
Okay.
I just want to use everyone's time as wisely as possible.
I do too.
So we have 12 minutes left.
Okay.
What are we going to do during that time? Can I bring up one thing with reference? Pardon me? I thought I heard something.
She said, shut up, Joe.
We can make it adjourn.
Tied to the definitions. This whole thing is walrus, Western Loudoun Rural. Changes to the definitions affect the entire county. I'm concerned about whether or not that is correct, whatever the right words are. The last meeting we talked about non-conforming structures. Those changes also affect the entire county. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to understand whether or not this is something it's correct that we're changing the zoning ordinance in areas outside of Western Loudoun. And then second of all, how is that message getting out? Concerned about interested parties that are sitting there saying, well, it's Western Loudoun, who cares? You know, I'm not meaning that in a negative way. I'm meaning is it's not my bailiwick. It's not my issue. Okay. And they're ignoring the changes to recreation, because the changes in here affect possibly the PDIP use in Eastern Loudoun County that's a recreation use. So I want to go ahead and bring that up, not to debate, but like to hear some feedback when appropriate.
Okay.
We are mindful of that. The county attorney's office is mindful of that. And we are looking at how any changes we make to a definition could impact the rest of the county. So that's a very good point.
My concern is then if it continues on and saying it's okay, it may be okay legally, but then how does this message get out?
No, I understand. The general comment is what affects more than just the West on a definition change.
We have all these huge groups that are dealing with this.
I think staff should be able to present that to us
if it
goes beyond just the West. Okay.
Thanks.
Mark?
Something just possibly for Jason is bringing back the guest farm and ranch definition as was. It still comes back with my all-time favorite. It says a farm and working on the farm, and you get back to the definition of farm. Could that be considered to be changed to the new terminology of agricultural operation? That's just something for you to think about, because you come back with the same issue of what's a farm.
Anything else? I think we're adjourned. Next meeting is December 3rd in Dulles.
And we are not going to be discussing definitions of the next
meeting. We are going to be.
No, we're not.
Oh, no.
But it's going to be discussed.
What?
It will fall to some.
It will be on an agenda at some point. It's not December. Thank you all. Thank you for coming in to speak.
Good. How are you?
Okay.